The plane had yet to take off, but Osgood, the photographer, was already snoring softly. He was in the center seat, wedged between John Thigpen and a woman in coffee-colored stockings and sensible shoes. He listed heavily toward the latter, who, having already made a great point of lowering the armrest, was progressively becoming one with the wall. Osgood was blissfully unaware. John glanced at him with a pang of envy. Their editor at the Philadelphia Inquirer was loath to spring for hotels and had insisted that they complete their visit to the Great Ape Language Lab in a single day. And so, despite seeing in the New Year the night before, John, Cat, and Osgood had all been on the 6 a.m. flight to Kansas City that same morning. John would have loved to close his eyes for a few minutes, even at the risk of accidentally cozying up to Osgood, but he needed to expand his notes while the details were fresh. John's knees did not fit within his allotted space, so he turned them outward into the aisle. Because Cat was behind him, reclining his seat was not an option. He was well aware of her mood. She had an entire row to herself, an unbelievable stroke of luck. But she had just asked the flight attendant for two gins and a tonic. Apparently having three seats to herself was not enough to offset the trauma of having spent her day poring over linguistics texts when she had been expecting to meet six great apes. Although she'd tried to disguise the symptoms of her cold ahead of time and explain away the residual as allergies, Isabel Duncan, the scientist who had greeted them, sussed her out immediately and banished her to the linguistics department. Cat had turned on her legendary charm, which she reserved for only the most dire of circumstances, but Isabel had been like Teflon. Bonobos and humans share 98.7% of their DNA, she'd said, which makes them susceptible to the same viruses. She couldn't risk exposing them, particularly as one was pregnant. Besides, the linguistics department had fascinating new data on the bonobos' vocalizations, and so a disappointed, sick, and frustrated Cat spent the afternoon at Blake Hall hearing about the dynamic shape and movement of tongues, while John and Osgood visited the apes.
"You were behind the glass anyway, right?"
Cat complained in the taxi afterward. She was crammed between John and Osgood, both of whom kept their heads turned toward their respective windows in a futile attempt to avoid germs.
"I don't see how I could have given them anything from behind glass. I would have stood at the back of the room if she'd asked me. Hell, I'd have worn a gas mask."
She paused to snort Afrin up both nostrils and then honked mightily into a tissue.
"Do you have any idea what I went through today?"
she continued.
"Their lingo is completely incomprehensible. I was already in trouble at discourse. Next thing I knew, it was declarative illocutionary point this, deontic modality that, blah, blah, blah."
She emphasized the blahs with her hands, waving the Afrin bottle in one and the crumpled tissue in the other.
"I almost lost it on rank lexical relation. Sounds like a smelly, over-chatty uncle, doesn't it? How on earth do they think I'm going to be able to work that into a newspaper piece?"
John and Osgood exchanged a silent, relieved glance when they got their seat assignments for the trip home. John didn't know Osgood's take on today's experience. They hadn't had a moment alone, but for John, something massive had shifted. He'd had a two-way conversation with great apes. He'd spoken to them in English, and they'd responded using American Sign Language, all the more remarkable because it meant they were competent in two human languages. One of the apes, Bonzee, arguably knew three. She was able to communicate by computer using a specially designed set of lexigrams. John also hadn't realized the complexity of their native tongue. During the visit, the bonobos had clearly demonstrated their ability to vocalize specific information such as flavors of yogurt and locations of hidden objects, even when unable to see each other.
He'd looked into their eyes and recognized, without a shadow of a doubt, that sentient, intelligent beings were looking back. It was entirely different from peering into a zoo enclosure, and it changed his comprehension of the world in such a profound way he could not yet articulate it.